If she knew
Love
her brother.
Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawahis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody, from Booker County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. This is Prophecy Keepers Radio coming to you, and this is Bluewater. We've got our old friend Red Elk with us this evening. We're really privileged, Grandfather Red Elk, to have you with us again. I guess it's been since February. It's long overdue. And I understand you've got some things you wanted to tell us.
Yes, this is correct. And Bluewater, thanks for having me on again. The first one was kind of funky. I couldn't get to see. Hardly anything. I kept getting interrupted by something. Well, forget it. But hopefully this will go better. But, I would like to share with the listeners who I am, what tradition is about, what the inner Hioka is about, and under the authority of who I work. And I've been out here for in the area of 5 years publicly, you know, worldwide. And I get a lot of, and that's what they think, and I feel I have no enemies. It's just misunderstanding. But nevertheless, you can't convince everybody. But I noticed a lot of people, mostly in the full blood, the First Nations people, they seem to have a tendency of, well, there's no nice way of putting it, they have a tendency of being able to write and being able to talk, but seem kind of limited in their reading ability. And they're making some very stabbing accusations. And without test cause, as far as I can see, if they would just read on my website, instead of word of mouth, that word of mouth gets bent out of shape. And, first off, my name is, Dr. Siske. It's one of the nation's way of saying Red Elk. And that is my name. It is my legal name. It's, I have a family name, too, actually. One Native American that's passed down through my mother's side. And another one, white, that my mother forced us to take. My mother was raised in a time when Indian was deemed to be Indian, was to be worse than a black man and the derogatory name of the black man during those times. She wanted nothing to do with being Indian. And she walked around telling everybody that she was an Egyptian because of her high cheekbones and all that, and forced the family into whitening. That's been my mother's problem, not mine. I'm Red Elk. I want all who are hearing to make this permanent in your ears. I am not a Mr. Red Elk. That is not a surname. I have only one name, Red Elk. No first, no last. And I am related to none of the Red Elks across our land of North America. I know Mr. Red Elk. And naturally, because I've got the name Red Elk, they come at me and a little bit angry. I'm using their name. Well, my gosh, do the whites jump on Mr. Smith for using their name? Do they jump on Mr. Canasta for using their name? The Indians are kind of crazy. I know Indians from many nations who in the past were literally enemies of each other. And they'll be darned if they don't have the name Red Elk. Names are just names, period. And they're open to everybody. In my case, it was given in ceremony. Understand that. This is my ceremonial name. And legally, I have changed it to my ceremonial name. I've gotten away from the white name, totally. Only about five people, my wife included, call me by my white name and shock me to hear it. And it's just the way it is, and I will not give it out. You have no reason to have it. And I am who I am, and the name is, again, lock this in your memory, please. The name is ceremonial, given during a naming ceremony, and at the same time, untraditional to tell people that. I belong to Free Society and am an honorary member of a board. The society that is the society, as far as I'm concerned, out of all of them, is called Inner Hayoka, or Hayoka. I also am a member of the Hayoka Society. I am a member of the Red Web Society, an honorary member of the Twisted Hair Caretaker section of the Crystal Skulls. And just an honorary member, nothing special. And nevertheless, the society that I was invited into, and the most important society, as far as I'm concerned, is the Inner Hayoka. I doubt strongly if there are more than four people in North America, very, very old people, that have even heard of such a thing as the Inner Hayoka. Many, many, many know of the Hayoka. And by the way, I have gotten reports that I'm not this, I'm not that Indian, so how can I belong to the Hayoka? My brothers and sisters, hear me true. The Hayoka are not limited to one or two nations there. They have Hayokas in just about every nation that exists in North America. So, those who think that just because they have Hayoka, they're the only ones, you're all wet, frankly. And, like it or not, that's a way of it. But, Inner Hayokas are, well, like I say, they're probably four, maybe only three people that have even heard of this society. And this has been an ongoing society for over 2,000 years. Always limited. Originally 13, but since the original, always limited to 12. All are extremely long livers. I myself have been told I will live to an age that I'm not comfortable even thinking about. And well beyond what man lives to today. And I can kind of believe it because, as I said, the Inner Hayokas are all very long, long livers. And, well, let me tell you a little bit. First, I think I have to tell you about me, this one, Red Elk. This one does not like to call myself I, and I'm this one, trying to overcome that I. I make you important, and I'm not important. This one makes me simply one of us, one of you. And that's the way I like to be. Just one, just someone, no one special. And, well, this one was born in Ellensburg, Washington State. That's Eastern Washington. And though I cannot recall my baby years, one event in it, yes, but not concerning this. Though I cannot recall my baby years, I do recall a North American Indian, and from the age of about 2 years old, I can actually recall this gentleman. We lived in a rodeo town, and lived literally right next to the rodeo grounds. And the Yakima Indians would come down, no cars, they had no cars, no trucks at that time. But they just come by horseback and wagon and walking. And they would come and knock on our door and ask permission to camp on our land. And always the permission was granted, despite my mother's likes and dislikes. She did me have a respect for people in general. And the camp would be set, and many Indians would be there and playing their gambling games and preparing for the rodeo, usually 2-3 days before the rodeo. But during this time of camp set up, everything settled down. A day, 2 days later, one lone Indian would come down all called him Chief. I don't know his real name. But we all called him Chief. We didn't call the other Indian Chief. This gentleman was held by the Lakota with the most highest regard by the Indian nation that was there, the Yakima people that were there. And he would come down the hill, and he always wore a blanket, a loincloth, and moccasins. And that was it. Nothing else. Not even a feather in his hair. And no shirt over his chest. It was blanket, loincloth, and moccasins. And generally, he would carry, oh, a grouse, or maybe two rabbits, or maybe two or three grouse, or whatnot, in one hand. And occasionally, a stick. This was his throwing stick with which he would kill these little beans for food. And this gentleman would always come to the front door and stand a few yards or feet away from the front steps. Never go to the door knock. And one of us kids, there were five of us, we would somebody would run and tell Mom, she's here. And Mom would jump to the door and look out, and he would nod at her, and she would nod at him and shut the door, and he would turn around and go to the outhouse and shut the door behind him. She would come out with a brand new or fresh blanket, knock on the outhouse door. The door would crack open, and he would pass out his blanket and his loincloth and take her blanket. She would then wash the loincloth and the blanket. And she would rinse it and wring it out as best she could and flap it in the wind. Flap these items in the wind. Then go back with these damn things. And knock on the door. The door would open. She'd hand that in and he'd hand out the blanket that he'd sitting there with. And he would give her the food that he had collected on the way down for her services and for the family. We never heard this man speak a word of English. We all, including my mother, had no idea he could, or if he could. But the gentleman would then close himself and walk off into the camp. And the camp would suddenly become very silent, and people would line up and make a Red Sea party. Some would go to the left, some to the right, and he'd walk through the middle, and there was the greatest respect, nodding of heads and recognition. And after the rodeo was over, everybody pulled up and would go home, including Chief. In short, we never saw Chief, except for that one time when he jumped out. Now, I can remember this at 2 years old. I can remember this at 3 years old. I can remember it at four. But on my fourth year, something was different. He did as I have just told you. And then the rodeo was over, and it was time for everybody to break up and go home, and they were doing so. Again, he never returned. This time he did. And it kind of shocked all us kids. And we ran and told Mom. I think my little sister ran and told Mom. And my older sister, too. She was out there, and she opened the door and looked out and started wringing her hands. She was afraid. Something was wrong. This was not in place. So she came out. And meanwhile, we kids, we kind of stood off to the side, a little bit afraid ourselves. We'd never seen she do this. And Mom looked at him, and he nodded at her, and she nodded at him, and then he turned around and walked over to the pile of his kids who were kind of cringing there. And they all kind of separated, all of us, and suddenly I was alone, you know. Everybody else had kind of gone their own separate ways and standing away from each other, and myself included. And the old chief walked up to me, and he walked up to my left side and turned around. He looked at my mother, and in perfect English, he said, as he put his right arm across my right shoulder, you know, from behind, mother, and he said, one day this boy will grow up and do many great things amongst his people.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website, with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And then he placed his hand on my head, on the hair of my head, and looked down at me. And he had this most wonderful smile on his face. And it was just love. And he took his hand off, turned around, nodded goodbye, and left. My mother just stood there, actually wringing her hands, really literally wringing her hands. What did this mean? What did this mean? And, well, from that day on, my mother was quite afraid that I would grow up to be Indian. She didn't want anybody to be Indian in her family, including herself. And she had plenty to worry about. I never knew I wasn't Indian. But nevertheless, anyway, as said, I always thought I was Indian. And in fact, I was quite a bit Indian anyway. But Mom, as I said, she wanted nothing to do with that. She gave us white jeans. And we all went by white jeans. Then we legally made white jeans. And, but nevertheless, as I grew from a little boy, we moved at the age of when I was four, very shortly after the 70s. We moved to Detroit, and I spent most of my youth in Detroit, in and around, you know, Ferndale, Utica, Hazel Park, Rosemont Woods, and so forth. And, but always I was Indian, as far as I was concerned. I went to school to the ninth grade, and I only went 34 days of that ninth grade. The rest of the time I was constantly skipping school. I learned how to read, I learned how to write, I learned how to spell sufficiently, enough for people to understand. I'm a terrible misspeller, but nevertheless, I learned the basics, and I felt personally, even at that youthful age, that was all I really needed, and as it turned out, frankly, I was right. I can have and subtract, and I can make sure I'm not getting cheated with my bank account, and so on and so forth. And I can write letters and sort of, kind of, if you can understand my writing, my shorthand, as well as my spelling. But I do okay. I didn't need to be a rocket scientist and have all the algebra and stuff. And they weren't teaching in the schools the things that I really, really hungered to have. The things of the spirit, the things of Mother Earth, the things of the Indian way to hold. And so I went out and I started learning these things all on my own. And we had a terrible joint officer. He was the fear of the whole school system there in Springdale, Michigan. But he could never catch me, not once. Got everybody else, but he never got me. He never thought of going to the public library where I'd be sitting studying the old ways that I could find. He never thought of going into Detroit proper and going behind the Ford factory and this factory and that factory where the little creeks ran with oil and spare tires that are all ripped up and old refrigerators. And I'm not exaggerating. And that's where I was, tracking, chasing huge deer, and they're still around to this day there. And fishing, getting enormous fish out of these oil-laden little creeks and stuff. I don't know if they're edible or not. I never had them. I just wanted to practice catching them. And trapping, pheasants, and things like that that didn't know how to make the traps. I can't tell you, I couldn't find any books on it. Figure four traps and deadfalls and so forth. But I did know rat traps and mouse traps. And I set those and I killed many, many, many birds and stuff that way. And very rarely did I get more than feathers because the town cats got them before I did. But nevertheless, that's what I was doing. I was sleeping in the culverts when there was no rain so that I'd be outside and hidden and covered. And, you know, my mother never knew where I was at or when I'd be home, poor woman. Never knew what I was doing. I couldn't tell her. She hated Indian dumb. Indian dumb, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, not dumb Indian, but Indian dumb. So much that I couldn't tell her that I was following and learning the old ways. I never once told her. In all the years that my mother lived, not one time did I tell her. Now, at age 10, at the very beginning of that 10th year, I was given the two necessary dreams to be a medicine man. And it was at that same age that I began my teaching. I'd say in a lot of high here, this one begins his teaching. Is learning medicine. And the very first thing that I was taught was how to levitate. And I was taught at that time to, once you learn it, you park it. You never use it again. Once you know you've done it and can do it, once you test the teachings to find out if they're true or false and succeed in doing it, finding out if it was true, and it was, by the way, then you park it and you never do it again until you are told to do it. Therefore, I'm not a show-and-tell teacher. I'm not one with that kind of an ego. And I am a disappointment to many because I will. This one just simply will not show you. Who are you? You are not the Creator. When the Creator tells me to do these things, I do them. I do not do them as some will of a man, some will of a woman. I do it only when I am ordered to do so. You hear me now? I teach how to do these things, and if you are serious of learning, then you test them until they become fact in your life as they have in mine. But I'm not going to show you, not unless the Creator informs me that I am to do. Now, that's basically me. I spent 41 years learning medicine. When most will spend 7, maybe even 12 years, and the Cherokee up to 17, I understand. I spent 41 years learning medicine. Medicine of North America, some of South America, some of the Maoris and the Hawaiians, some of the Africans, some of the Finland, some of Russian steppes. A little bit here, a little bit there. 41 years of learning. Long, long time. And not being able to share it with anyone. Just learn, learn, learn. In those 41 years, the Creator spoke to me and said, I am going to turn you over to the black side, the dark side, the satanic side, to be completely honest with you, the witches, the sorcerers. And he said, you will think I have left you, but do not doubt that I am with you. And I said, sir, why are you doing this? Why is this going to be? And he said, so you can know the enemy. And I spent 8.5 years learning the enemy. And I know the enemy well. I know the ways of the sorcerers. I know the ways of the witches. I know it, boy, and I know when it's used against me. And I know how to counteract it. I am thankful for 8.5 years of darkness in my life. 8.5 years of feeling that the Creator had abandoned me, but holding to His word that He's there. But I tell you, it was not a pleasant time. And I have learned some very, very wicked ways. Not one time, not one time did I apply those ways to anyone. I just learned them. And I have not applied them yet, and I have never applied it since. I just learned it. So when it comes against me, I recognize it. I know its source. And I know we can overpower it and overcome it. And I do not fight fire with fire. That just destroys the forest. No, I fight fire with a more powerful thing. I fight it with the thing that I have found. This one has found is the most powerful thing in existence, short of the Creator Himself and the three that are one that He is. Love. L-O-V-E. And it is love beyond anything that this old man can call forth. It is love beyond anything that this one can manifest. It is a love that had to be worked on, had to be learned, and I'm still learning. It's called agape love. That's a Bible word. I don't care what you think about me. No better word for it than that. It's unforgiving. I mean, it's all forgiving, pardon me. And it is just accepting. It's loving. Despite what the enemies do, it's loving. And it's irritating to the enemies. And hopefully, and I have noticed occasionally, it turns to friends from these enemies. And eventually, occasionally, rarely, it turns those friends into the same way that I call purity, the way of the outcome. So, there's a little bit about me. Now, I'd like to share the outcome. First of all, I'm going to light a cigarette, so let's stop for a moment, please, brother.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
3, 2, 1. The Inner Helka originally consisted of 13 men North American Indian who followed and learned it from the knees and the feet and their dance with one man. This one man was called the Pale One, the Pale Teacher, and his name, the Son of God, Christ, to the rest of the world. Understand this, I'm not Mormon, I've never been a Mormon. I don't like your proselytizing and trying to make me Mormon. Don't care for it at all. And I've never been to a Mormon church, but that's early. I'm not against a Mormon being a Mormon. I'm not against an Indian being a traditionalist. I'm not against a Muslim being a Muslim. But nevertheless, I have never taken to the Mormon's way of teaching, other than that the Christ was here in North America. And the original 13 learned at his feet. He came over here on one of his uncle's ships, who was trading with the American Indians, not so much in gold, a little bit, but then a little silver, but basically for copper. And they would sell their ships long ago up into as close as they could into the Great Lakes, and then they would trade with the Indians. The Indians were not slaves. The trade was a fair thing. They would go and work when they wanted to, collect what they wanted, and when the so-called tail people came, they had a stockpile and they would trade. This was a good time. It was a fair time. And the Christ came on one of his uncle's ships, who was a well-to-do man, evidently, and he and one of his brothers, another uncle, evidently shared business together. And I think they were two different companies, but nevertheless, they helped each other out. And both were based in trade and transportation. Anyway, he came here to learn what we, our people, the native people of America at that time, had retained from the original time, the time of the two, the original two, the ones the white called Adam and Eve. And he also came to share what he had learned in other places other than the Hebrew land. He went all over, from what we are told. Went to India, Tibet. He went all over. He truly hungered to learn and to know the ways of the Creator. And he came here to see what we had that he did not know of, and what we had retained, and to share what he had been given and taught and learned himself. Well, in those days, there was no medicine man. There really wasn't even a medicine woman, but the women were the healers, not the men. And the women, being so close to the earth while the man was out hunting the big game and stuff, the women were out picking plants and cutting themselves and so on and so forth, and finding plants here and there that did a good job of healing this and healing that. And there was the beginning of medicine. It was women, not men, that could take care of a wound or whatnot, a good hearty cough in the lungs and stuff. They've learned over their years and past now. Also, they had retained from the original mother of all, Eve, if you would, and at that time period. And so too had our men retained some of that knowledge. But nevertheless, mankind, Indian mankind, eventually, you know, they looked over mama's shoulder and grandma's shoulder and auntie's shoulder and learned a little bit about this plant and that plant, and eventually in their machoism they kind of took over, and stupidly in their love, women let them. Until today, you've got these people called medicine men, and they think they're boss. There's medicine women, but they think they're boss over the medicine women. This is going to change. It's not a matter of gotcha. It is going to. And there will be no if, and, or buts about it. There will be unity. Man and woman will be equal in medicine. Once again, women will no longer take place in the back circle. They will be in the great circle at the front, doing an equal share with the men. And the men will learn to let that be. The men will learn to let that go, because they are equal to each other. There is no back seat anymore.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like
dehydrated.
Freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond. Put it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
Doesn't matter. We had no choice. think that was Nazi. Don't get heady about being a Redskin or Muslim or white guy, white superiority. Don't get heady. That is just plain stupid. It just shows you haven't got half a brain. That's all. But anyway, my brothers and sisters, 13 people followed Christ across all of North America. That included up by the Alaskan Native Eskimos, all the way over to the Greenland and a little bit beyond Eskimos on the East Coast, zigzagging back and forth, and down into North or South America, learning, teaching. And the 13 followed and learned as he taught, people after people, band after band, tribe after tribe. And they learned a lot. If you want, you could call them the 13 apostles, the 13 Indian apostles. We don't. But if you want to, if that's the way that you want to think it, so be it. But you know this, we do not do this. But, I love my cigarettes. Anyway, then one day he said, okay, I'm going to go. But I'll be back. I'll be back. You know, Arnold Nickelberg or whatever his name play. But nevertheless, he did leave. And for 212 years, throughout South and North America, there was no band-to-band warfare. No nation-to-nation warfare. He brought total peace from Eskimos to South Americans and in between. We learned to trade. Oh, there was killings. Don't say there wasn't. With, you know, little family squabbles or something like that. And with no gathering of great war parties and going at each other. But in time, as this 212 years slipped by, he didn't come back. And 212 years is both a long and a short time. It's a long time as you're living it, and it's a short time as far as history goes. say, as today, things have changed a little bit in the Sundance Act. Maybe more than a little bit, but still basics are there. In the old days, when it was time to do ceremonies, to give honor, and to do great prayer, the elders would get together and they would pray about it, and they would find the place that this was to be through prayer. And they would call their scouts, and the scouts would go out in all directions looking for the proper tree to be planted in a great circle for the Sundance. And they would come back and report, I found this tree, I found that tree. And the elders would pray about where to go to look at this tree or that tree. And they would get their answers. And they would go to this tree and that tree, a number of trees. And they would look these trees over and they would gather together at that tree or beside close to that tree and pray to the Creator and this tree to be the tree. Until eventually they would find the okay, the tree. Then they would send for runners or send runners up for young men to come to this place and to bring a young virgin girl. And they would do so. They would have a number of young strong men come. And sometimes these trees were 2-3 days away. Not very often, but sometimes they were that far away from where the circle was to be made and the dance was to be. And the young men would come and the virgin would come, and they would dress the virgin in an all-white high dress, and they would give her a tomahawk, and in later days, a metal axe or hatchet rather. And the young men would go and denude the tree of all limbs, except at the very, very top, where there was always left a sprig of green, naturally growing. Then this young woman, they would do prayer and ceremony, and this young virgin girl, woman, whatever, today it's kind of got to be baby thing.
Yeah.
Terrible, but nevertheless, she would go screaming at this tree and strike it 3 times. 1, 2, 3. And her job was done. And then they would cut the tree, and they would line the men up in the way the tree was to fall. And these men would catch the tree before it hit the ground. Men on each side of the tree. And some of these trees could be quite long, 60 foot or so. And remember, they were green. They were heavy. And then they would head off towards the great circle prepared. And there would be relays of men, never once allowing that tree to touch the ground. Then they would bring it to the great circle, and with great fanfare and prayers and ceremony, they would plant this tree into the very dead center of the great circle. And then eventually, those who were praying would tie lines of leather or horsehair, today of the types of line, to the tree up towards the top, and put skewers on it, made of wood or bone, and pierced their skin and tied to them. And they would lean back and they would pray and they would dance to the drums. And in the old days, when they were exhausted and fell down, old ladies who were given the responsibility and honor would go and cover that exhausted, half-dead dancer prayer with a blanket. Today, most of them were taken down at night and going to bed and shoved out in the morning and go empty again. Things have changed. It's slowly going a little bit changed. But nevertheless, and then when the time came, they would pull away from these skewers and rip their skins and leave great gashes in their hide. And they would be taken to be doctored. And they would stay a certain time being doctored. And then when they walked out, people would touch them, and the people had touched me were healed of whatever disease. Now, that is the Sundance of old. Today it's quite similar. But nowhere have I received writing. It was in a society, secret society, that they didn't pass on to those outside of the society. So you might as well say even those that had writing had no writing, because the vast majority had no way. And then pencil guns, scratchings on walls. So we had no way to write the things that we knew. And so we do, now hear me, we do ceremony in remembrance of all these secret things that we've learned. Ceremonies basically are acting out a play. But over the years, the play acting out of the Sundance, has lost its meaning, just as it did with the Maya and the Aztec. And instead of S-O-N, they went S-U-N. And what this is all about, hear me. And those who do not believe that the Bible is Indian, and those who do not believe that the Indian is not the Bible, you listen carefully and you start thinking about these things, please. Use your wisdom and hear me. The circle, the great circle, with a hole dug in its dead center, like most people are nations, make our sweat lodges. The circle represented all life, every planet, every being on those planets, the stars, the rain, space, our own peoples, our own world, our sun, our galaxy, and beyond, our worms, everything that takes to make life, our trees, our clouds, our weathers. It represents everything, the all and never ending, the great circle of life. All life. Life beyond what the norm thinks exists. Believe me, there certainly are other people. We are not all. But that's up to you. You have to reject it. It's your path. And, by the way, I want all to understand, this one does not want you to believe a word I say. Hear me. Don't believe a word I say. Test it. Through prayer, through study, through contemplation. Test it and find out if read up speech true or was spoken. Split tongue. Just don't go on saying read up that dumb. Don't be that dumb. Denominations are started because people were that dumb. Somebody said something and everybody grabbed onto it. Religions are started from the same thing. Don't be stupid. Believe not a word I say. I would expect more from you people, the human race, than what so many are showing me. Alright, but that's over. The great circle was made, prepared, sanctified, prayed over, cleansed. The tree had been found, the virgin sent, the bearer gone to get and bring back. The Virgin represented the Mother of Christ. The striking of the tree with the hatchet, the tomahawk, was her striking the one that her enemy, that section of that piece of wood that killed her son, that was killed on. Her frustrations, her pain was taken out upon that piece of wood.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow. But tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quiñones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries. Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
The young men that lined up for the tree were the equivalent of the one called Barnabas in the Bible, who when Christ was stumbling, they took this man, supposedly a black man, out of the crowd and made him carry the cross. This is what those boys were doing. The green on top of the tree. Hear me now. The tree was not cut. Green on top or some bottom. A tree is a connector to the Almighty High. A tree knows Mother Earth. And the tree's head stands in the heavens and knows the Creator. It's like a telephone line. So that green stayed there, and the tree was cut. Death was brought to that tree by cutting it away from its very roots. But when it was replanted in the great circle, again, it was in a sense rerooted to the mother, our Mother Earth. And the green showed there is life above. And if the tree was dropped, they'd have to go back and start all over and get another tree. But these people in Relay would carry this great tree. For how many hours or days it took, day and night, not once letting it down, they could help it. And they would sing. They would sing songs of love and songs of labor. They would sing going home songs. And various other songs to keep their spirits high and know that that tree was green and heavy, but make their workload light. And the tree with great fanfare would be brought to the circle, and with great fanfare planted, but without falling, into that hole prepared for it. The tree represented the cross. It had no cross arms, but it was wood, and it was for the same cause, death. That those preparing to pray in this manner, they pierced themselves. Christ himself was pierced. I said pierced themselves. More often than not, they were pierced by others as the Christ was. And they were connected to the tree, to this great cross without arms, as the Christ was, but not nailed up. They were connected with a long line and with great big sores through muscle and fat and skin and tied. And they began their dancing. They began their praying. They began whistling their whistles of eagle feather whistles for to hide their pain and stuff as they went about so they could shout in agony. They would cry to the great Creator with these wonderful whistles. They would be as the eagle who flies so high. Here in America, one of the highest flyers. Not the highest flyers of Earth, but the highest flyers here in America. The messenger is the one that knew God best because he rose high to him. And then, when it was time, their days of fasting, they were not drinking, they were not eating. As the Christ himself went into the wilderness and not drink and not eat and prayed, they did this too at this time. And they prayed for their own needs, maybe, but generally they were praying for others. And the Christ was praying for
would come and grab them as you do and pull them for them, ripping those things apart, ripping their hide. Then these people were taken in their exhausted form, and still are, into the wigwams, into the teepees, into the whatnot to be doctored and tended in old days for 3 days and 3 nights. I don't know about today, I think it varies. And then they would emerge. Christ was in the cave, in his own burial tomb, for 3 days and 3 nights. And then he emerged and walked the earth, Pequa, alive, thunderbirds. And he kept his name, the Son of God. Alive. And they come out alive. They had gone through their hell. They had gone through their death. They have gone and prayed. They have prayed for others. They have prayed even for themselves on occasion. And they had died the death without the death. For that death can only be done one time. And that's the only time it ever needs to be done and ever has been done. But they represent him. They are, at that moment, what is called Christians. The word Christian means Christ's follower. It doesn't mean these people that go to church stab each other in the back during the week. I love you, brother. I love you, sister. What the hell were you doing in that church across the street last week? You know we're the only right ones. No, no, I'm not talking about those kind of so-called Christians. Christian means Christ follower. And Christ with love on two legs. And in that way, they were Christians. And in that way, they are Christians. They are following the way of love, praying for one another, praying for the needs, praying for help and hope. And they have gone through great torment to do this. And believe me, my brothers and sisters, white, red, green, yellow, plaid, whatever, they do this for you. Some of them will do it just for their own red race. But this is the kind of sacrifice the red man carries for the white world in many cases. And you slap back us. And the red world slaps at each other in the red world. Shame on all of us. Now, the sun dance was S-O-N, not S-U-N. The story that the ceremony was to make the people remember was the story that you can read in the good book alone. Do not tell me that the good book is not Indian, and that Indian is not the good book. You remember Pequa. You remember Sundance. You remember the Aztec, the Maya. You remember the Tlingit. Tlingit, Tlingit. They don't make the key sound. The West Coast, who have their own stories of death and resurrection. You remember the people of the Hopi. You remember the people of the Arapaho, the Navajo, the Apache. You remember those down there. They too have their own stories, their own mythologies, lost over time from the original. Now use your brains and set those brains at work, trying to find the connection from the good book to your mythologies, because your mythologies started on facts, as all mythologies start on facts. So, that is the story of the combination, the bridging between the white world and the Indian world, the world that has been fought over for ages. The world of the so-called, we're right, we're, you're wrong,
All of us are brainwashed. One religion. All of us have been born in the same mind womb of the Creator. You, no mind would exist if He didn't want to take us into existence. It is a womb up there, and you and I came from it. I don't care your color. I don't care how much you hate or love me. I don't care. We are brothers and sisters, whether you like it or not. The Creator is my Creator, is your Creator, is our Creator. The 13 in our Iokas followed the Christ and learned these things that I have shared with you. And he left, said I'd come back. One day, we thought he did. We made a big mistake. His name was not Jesus, his name was Cortez. So we were wrong. But don't give up hope, brothers and sisters. He didn't tell you when he came back. And we do make many, many mistakes. We have made many mistakes. You and I, the individual, be your own creed, your own race. And I'm not talking to the right man. I'm talking to all men. We make mistakes all the time. Yes, we made a big mistake, the Indians of the Americas. We thought that Christ had come back and it was Cortez. We screwed up oil. We screwed up big time. But he said he'd be back, and as I said, he did not say when. So don't give up hope. He is coming. He is the Son of God in his beginning. God doesn't lie. Creator does not lie. He just didn't say when he was coming back. Counter on his word, though. And, well, mistakes happen. Mistakes have happened in the past. Mistakes happen every minute of the day, worldwide as well as individually. Live by your mistakes and learn by them, my brothers and sisters. See them as a gift from the Creator, a goof that you can learn to overcome. Know also that there was one who did die to help you when you goof. I am not speaking any religion, although many here that are Indians will say at the end, bull crap, listen to my words, not listen to what you call religion. There was one who died for us, and his name was the Christ to the white world. It was the Bell One, the Bell Teacher, to us, and Eshkene, the Son of God. And if you need help, he's there, but he's not there to be used. He's there because he loves you. And you want him to help you, you better love the fact that he's there for you, and I, just for you, not for everybody down the road. Just for you. And by asking him in, you know he says he will come in, and he does not lie. But he is a gentleman. He will come in and possess you. Hear me, it's possession. But unlike other possessions, he, the Son of God, got himself on two legs, gave us self-will, and he will not take that away. We've all heard the story, the name Indian Giver. Well, it should be White Man Giver. The Indian gives his word and keeps it, the white man the one that breaks it. But nevertheless, for the sake of the way that it's brought out, God is not an Indian Giver. He does not take away what he gave. Your self-will. So he will not go against your self-will. He will come in. He will possess you. He will not take away your self-will. He will be in you to help you when you call him. Ask for help. Then he will do so. Until hopefully you realize he's always there because you've asked him now. And he's never gone against your will. You've tested that thousands of times. And you like what you have in you and you want to change. That's what religion. That's just the way it is. Mind you, I did not beg you to go down to the Catholic Church, the Mormon Church, the Protestant Church. I didn't beg you to go to any churches, any denomination, any religion, be it Muslim, be it Buddhist, be it whatnot, Christian or Indian. And by the way, the Indian is not a religion, it's a tradition. And, no, I have not pointed you that way. I hope not go that way. Because to me, I find that has been a flytrap, and the great wonderful spider has made that great wonderful web, and you favor people in and make it all covered and shrouded with that wonderful, wonderful spider webbing and feel all cuddly and sweet and beautiful, good. Unfree to fly. Doesn't mean that you don't go to these places. Just means to watch out and keep full of spiders. And all that happy little purring inside the cocoon of death that the flies have been trapped in. The lures come to my church. It just means that they're trapped. But purity, the way of Ishikan, the way the inner Iokas were taught, meant that you are free. We are salvated, not just no salvation. Salvated means to be a free thinker. And Ishikanai, the bell teacher, was a free thinker in Typhoid. And he stopped to set you to be free, to be a free thinker. So yes, you can meditate. I know it. I've done it. And I've taught it, and I teach it. And this works. You can teleport. Oh yes, I'm not too dangerous though. Without proper instructions and use of those instructions. You can change water into wine and don't go get south now. It can be done. Did I? No, I know my client. But one time I did change filthy water into flammable, wonderful drinking water. About 1/2 inch. Above a fresh cow pie, I filled my guts and was saved. Kind of changed the water into wine, wouldn't you think? When the rest of the fire crew I worked with, their tongues were splitting and their lips had already split. I was fine. You can do the things of Christ. You can do these things. All mankind can. And it doesn't take a religion to do it. It takes a childlike mind. And it takes purity. It takes no payment. Let you be a free thinker. Free from the norm. A Ayoka, contrary. An inner Ayoka, even more of a contrary than Ayoka.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated and freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put
it under your bed. Put it in your closet. Give it for Christmas to people and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
My brothers and sisters, many have come against me, and in truth, does it hurt? It is. At first, and then I realized if it hurts me, it's because I think I'm God. I'm not. No, there's slapping at the Creator in me. There's slapping at love in me. They're hitting me, and I'm the one that gets the slap. But they're poking at it. And anyone that does, they're poking with trouble. So watch out, you're poking around. Watch out, your bad mouth. Think. Come on. We've all got brains. We're all capable of thinking. And I would venture that the vast majority that have been against me come on against me. Christ hit me really, if you want, I'm not afraid to say that. Love hit me. I venture that they can all be. And I'll venture the vast majority have never gone to my website and read anything about it, but got it secondhand, thirdhand, 20th hand. And jumping on a bandwagon, where your bandwagon is going in circles, and you're chasing the wagon's tongue. You don't even know it. Come on now. Use your brains for change. Be fair. You want people to be fair with you? Expect to be fair with others. I have a website. Read it. It is www.redhelk.org. O-R-G. All little, all together. I'll repeat it again. www.redhelk.org. On that website, if you don't have a computer, somebody you do know certainly has. You can ask them to check it out. Then you read the front page, and you will say that you will see plainly, and it's been there for years. This is how dumb you people are, chasing after somebody's wording without checking yourself. It plainly states I am not a full-blood Indian, that I am a breed. It plainly states that. Right on the front page. Read it. Also, go to the lessons page. Now, the people are just about me selling the sacred knowledge and the same people claiming you're no medicine man. Well, if I'm not a medicine man, how do I know the sacred knowledge the so-called sell? Idiots, come on now. But nevertheless, read that, the webpage, and the front page, and listen, and you will see that this has been here a long time too. I say plainly that you can get these lessons for free, with the exception of the drumming. You can't get that, but nevertheless. And I'm not the only Indian out there, or half-breed, or whatnot, that's selling drumming. So don't jump on me for selling drumming. Don't be that dumb. But you can get it all for free in the Word of God. I tell that plainly. And I tell it plainly that you are not paying me for sacred knowledge. You are paying me for
something that if you dig your nose in that dang book, you can learn for yourself. You are paying me to do your homework. Now, for those people that think that Indian medicine people are the only ones in the world that know how to levitate, to teleport, to do this or do that, boy, are you all wet where you've been living. People all over the world do that, and it's not just North American Indians. There are other medicine people. And guess what? There are people that like medicine. And the Christ said, the things I've done, you can do even more, so for I am with you. And it's written in that book. And if anybody wants to read that book, you'll find out how to do it. There's an actual formula there. I am selling no medicine sacred. Secrets. Man can go to a motel room and steal a book. A good book out of the motel. Steal it. S-T-E-A-L. You can buy it in a cheap shop from 25 cents to $2.50. Or they can go and get it big and fancy for maybe thousands of dollars. It's up to that. But that book has been out there for over 2,000 years. And everything that is on my lessons, you can get from that book. And if you think that the only ones that know this is your local medicine man, well then open up the book and surprise him by doing it yourself. I know medicine secrets, sacred secrets. And teeth are not sacred secrets. They are sacred, but they are not sacred secrets. They are in writing and essential for thousands and thousands and thousands of wounds. Now, attacking me on that, that just plain shows your ignorance and your arrogance. It literally shows, I hope it shows you, how stupid you are. Be you red, white, yellow, or whatnot. Better pay attention to what's there. You can talk on the radio. You can type on the internet. You can talk amongst yourself. And you can all do it down in Red Oak. You're not down in Red Oak, my friend. You're down to the Creator. One who tries to follow the Creator. You're down in the one that lives inside my life. And jam in yours if you won't let it. Imagine if you only met your look past, I'm going to tell you for not doing so. Again, now hear me. Not one word of religion has come from my lips other than against it. Not one word of denomination has come from my lips other than against it. Gathering of love, I'm for. Gathering in little boxes and saying, I'm the only one that has that love. This old man is dead against. Don't be careful. We come from the same mind, you and I. We are the top of the ocean, one relation, you and I. I don't care if you think I'm full of B.O. You don't want to be around me because I smell bad. I don't care. Still your brother. And I still love you. I wish that you would put down your arms, put down your little split tongues. I wish somebody would stand on your stupid split tongues. And feel the pain of what you cause to others. Not me necessarily, but to others. We can tell me what. Mankind is like that, and I include myself in that way. But nevertheless, my brothers and sisters, understand love is the only healing power. Love stops wars. Love stops hate. Love stops quarrels and fights. Guess what? It stops accidents.
integration of it all. And when you're just standing in front, there's probably just some damn thing that you can do. Pardon my so-called friends. Come on now. We are supposedly adults. Think twice before you strike out against one another. If you feel like you've got to strike against right now, as you're hearing these words, that's your path. I know that there will be many that do so anyway. But you're not it, I know. You're poking my skin. And, you know, when a physical poke is felt, in this case, a spiritual physical poke, sure I did. But the finger kind of goes through me and pokes at the Creator inside me. Look who you're messing with, kid. She's a bigger one than you can ever hope to be. You be careful.
No.
No. Is there any questions you'd like to ask? And thank you a lot for allowing me to carry on so long.
I was enrapt. I love to hear the elders talk. You were speaking with the spirit, and
then go back and rehash what we're just talking about.
Well, I know, folks. I just turned the recording off for a second, take a short break. But I was just telling Grandfather Red Elk he did a 1 hour and 23 minute what they call in Shakespearean terms soliloquy, which is a one man talk.
Yeah, which means, my brothers and sisters, I'm sure that I talk too much.
Oh, no. I there's a lot of people out there that they wouldn't have the opportunity to listen to you teach this at the fire. And that's the kind of thing that you teach at the fire.
Yeah, it is.
And that's why I was just so absolutely quiet. And, you know, I might have said hello once or twice.
Hear me, I don't go into this much detail about personal attacks. It's just time that people realize what they're attacking. Use their brains. Go to the website. See if they're being told right. If they're accepting what they're told is true. If it is true. You know, I'm talking to adults out there that are acting like little brats.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, these are my brothers and sisters. And they are adults. And they should not go out there throwing their lances and poking around without knowing their enemy, for God's sake. Just because somebody comes into camp and screams that there's a bad guy out there in the woods, let's go get him. Well, that bad guy might damn well be one heck of a big, big bear to get them. They better know what they're chasing after before they go out to do it so they know how to handle it correctly.
Well, I get it too. You know, and my teacher, John Red Hat, taught me and has a page that's Kitu-Society, KWTOOWAH-Society.org, has a page about witchcraft. And he explained that 100 years ago or more, and going back, several thousand, any bad thought was considered to be witchcraft. Any resentment period was witchcraft.
Purity.
Well, our people, up until about, we basically lost our culture in 1880. The only people that were really practicing the old ways were, there might have been some scattered people that didn't have to walk the trail with tears. We knew there was a group that went to Mexico and they were eventually found. But at least in Oklahoma, the only Cherokees that were practicing the old ways was the Nighthawk Catua people. And of course, there were other old ways that were being practiced, and it was witchcraft. And today, witchcraft is it's probably easier to find Cherokee witches than it is to find Cherokees. Because the Cherokee is most Cherokee witches don't know they're witches.
Well, let's put it this way: under the rules and regulations that you've just passed, there isn't a non-witch in the world. You know, it's
a sweet young thing that walked by, and some young guy has got her in bed in his mind, and oh, that's not there. Witchcraft.
That's right.
But thoughts are real. And in a sense, it's very, very true. If you think it, the Creator says you just done it. And, you know, I've asked people around my teachings every time I ask them, which out of the Ten Commandments do you consider the worst of the commandments? A lot of them agree on one thing, but occasionally one gets one and one gets another. And I look at them and tell them they're all wrong. Because according to the very word, if you think one of these ten things, if you think it, God says you've broken all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not one greater than the other. It gives you a good idea of why he gave us a break and gave us a chance to get out of this rat race of ungodliness, really. You know, the Christ, the death, the resurrection. And again, no religion, just facts. But, yeah, I guess we're all witches. This old man, too, although I'm getting old enough for a sweet young thing coming by. I don't have her in bed with me anymore. It's just not a matter of desire. It's just a matter of, I've learned that's my sister. And, yeah, she's got a fine body, and I hope she uses it correctly. But I don't...
So you get tired just looking at her, right?
Well, I get the pleasure of praying that she will grow up and be a godly woman, a woman of right standing in his sight. Unfortunately, chances are not hurt near zero, but occasionally, you know, it doesn't hurt to pray.
Well, not to change the subject, you know, there's been some things going on this week, and, you know, the folks on Out There TV, they're going to be talking about this, and, what I was going to say is, I don't want to get real specific about it, but I was going to say, instead of mentioning exactly, you know, people can go to the website and they can see what's going on, but I was going to say, generally, why don't the Bible talks about wars and rumors of wars. I'd like to ask you what you think of rumors and wars of rumors.
Well, that's a very unexpected question.
Uh-huh.
Rumors. I got rumors chasing me, and you've already heard what I think of them.
Uh-huh.
Check it out for yourself before you jump on a rumor wagon. Don't accept rumors until you check to find out where those rumors come from. Are those rumors simply somebody's idle chatter in an elevator? Or are they stemmed from an actual fact? And then check out that fact and check it against the good book. Does it rhyme and reason with your safety net, the good book? If it does, then hang in there. It'll probably be. If it does to a point, you know, close is just close. It's not a hit. It's a strike, but it's not a hit. So if there's a little bit of wobble in that when you check it, I ignore it. Simply ignore it. I know that there's some truth, and I know that it is not all true. So therefore, I cannot count on this rumor that I have checked as being a total fact.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nrf2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals, which cause oxidative stress. Protandem has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities, such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandim reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandim reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing Nrf2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
We're speaking in reality about this, the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 12th,
mm-hmm. What is it? Yeah, there's an Australian scientist that began telling folks at the end of April, anonymously, that we were going to be, there was an outer space cloud and three large objects headed toward us, and he didn't say who he was until a month later, and then some people come out and say, oh, you know, we were just fooling you. Well, that's fine. You know, what he's saying could be very well be a rumor, but that still leaves the fact that everybody can see that just about every ship in our Navy is out at sea. That's never happened, not even peacetime. The Federal Reserve has pumped 20% and enough money into circulation to devalue the dollar by 20%. There are things going on. I mean, my friend...
give your website to those people that might be
using it. Well, it's prophecykeepers.com. But our mutual friend Susanna said that, you know, she lives in San Diego, and she said in the last 3 weeks, she says the helicopter traffic is just constant down there in San Diego. And,
they must be having a sale on fresh donuts.
Or something.
But in truth, one thing that concerns me about this man coming out and suddenly sharing, why did he wait till the last second?
Well, because he'd been threatened. Now, the interesting thing is, let me tell you a little bit about this. I had a 3-day religious gathering this weekend, and then Tuesday morning, I woke up and our friend White Wolf, Daryl White Wolf in Australia, he's a Texas Cherokee. He was sold back in 58, I guess, by his grandfather down in Fort Worth that his people were Wolf Clan Cherokee. That makes sense because the Texas Cherokees were Chickamauga people, and Chickamauga people were predominantly Wolf Clan. He was raised in Indiana, raised up among the Miami people. But he put out a challenge to the elders, I guess about 10 days ago. They said, you know, no more BS here, no more quotes. We really need to be talking about what's going on here. And I corresponded with him last week, and then we had a phone call about 2 o'clock Saturday morning. And then all of a sudden, Tuesday morning, I get this email, and he sends me this link to bushcountry.org. And bushcountry.org had followed the postings of this anonymous scientist in Australia. And they had extracted it all out and put it in one place. But the scientists began revealing things and gave people enough information that they were able to, search engine terms and so forth and so on, you know, over a 2-week period that they were able to get some information. And he kept saying, look, I'm going to tell you who I am, but first I'm going to go visit some family. And he says, then 2 weeks later, you know, I'll come back and tell you who I am. So on the 15th of May, he left for 2 weeks, came back on the 29th, and said that his name was Dr. Gartrell. Well, in the meantime, some people did some searching around and found out, yes, Dr. Gartrell had published some scientific papers along with some other people having to do with near space objects. But to my knowledge, I'm the only person that, well, all I did was put Dr. and Gartrell, and I added an L to it, because it just didn't look right with one L at the end, and the word Australia into the Google search engine. And I came up with a document from the South Australia Parliament, where a Dr. Gartrell from Mount Compass, South Australia, and it gave his physical address also, was testifying concerning some caves. And he and his friends were Sri Lankers, cave explorers, and had found some Pleistocene-era dinosaur bones in this cave. Well, and he mentioned in the testimony that he was, and under oath, he says, "I'm a physicist, but I don't practice my training anymore." And so that rang a bell. I went, "Whoa, I got him!" So I put his name and his physical address in Mount Compass into the search engine. Came up with two pages that indicated that he was a blueberry farmer, had a pick your own blueberry patch, and also made wine. One of the pages had his telephone number and his real email address on it. So to my knowledge, I was the only person to find out that his first name is Grant. And I called the guy, I guess it was late Tuesday night here, it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon there, and left a message on his answering machine. And then the next morning, next day, I guess in the afternoon, I called back, and it would have been about 10 o'clock his time, 9 or 10, and the answering machine was off. So his time, it would have been late evening. And so I figure, well, you figure if it was a hoax, to my knowledge, I was the first person to figure out his actual name, address, and phone number. And you'd figure that unless he was in holed up in a cave somewhere, he would have called me and said, "Hey, this is a hoax, and forget it." But I really don't know what to make of the fact that he hasn't gotten back to me. It could mean one thing, could mean another. But basically, he's just said that on the 8th and 9th of this, going back to the end of April, he said that his scientific team 20 years ago discovered that that we would be passing through a debris cloud. He says it's coming out of dark sky, and he says unless you have the right lenses, I've been an amateur astronomer since I was 12, and I understand a little bit of these things work because I've seen them in action. But astronomers use spectrograph, and they can figure out exactly what composition, speed, size, and so forth of objects are. And he said, you will begin to see low-flying, very large meteorites. Well, that rang a bell because people have been calling into the Art Bell Show talking about, I'm a trucker, and I just saw this huge orange fireball, and, three people called in one night on one show a week and a half ago. And then all of a sudden this week, the news, and I've been hearing rumblings about the financial community. I heard them over a week ago. I have some friends, and they're, your mutual friends and mine that went to Canada. They had heard from their friends in St. Joseph, Missouri, who are money, that everybody's pretty nervous. Well, I found out why. On Tuesday, the Federal Reserve has pumped enough money into liquidity, which, in my mind, that means that's cash that's out in the banks. $46 billion more than usual. One person said that's enough to devalue the value of the dollar by 20%. Nothing like this has ever happened. And then, all kinds of stuff going on.
What's the reason behind doing that on the money?
Nobody really knows, other than the only explanation is that the governments of the world know something's up and they're getting ready for it. Plus, back in...
Whoa. I wouldn't say that's the only explanation, but that is an explanation.
Uh-huh.
Careful on your choice of words.
Right.
There's things that are known by others that you and I don't have any idea about, and it could be that in this case, too. So be careful of your words, please.
But back in January, there was a ham radio operator that's... he was listening on ham radio on single sideband on the military frequencies and heard an intercept. And it's legendary. They call it the snowball intercept because the guy's call sign was snowball, and he was transmitting in the clear with voice. And somebody cut him off very shortly after he began and said, snowball, snowball, go green, which means, that he apparently didn't know he was transmitting in the clear. And what he was saying was, back in January, was that, T-minus 129 days and counting until impact. And then he was cut off by another operator saying, shut up, go green. And that was the end of it. There's a copy of it on my website right now. I just put it up a few minutes ago, and you can listen. Go ahead. Prophecykeepers.com, /3.html is the article that I put up that's got all this information on it. Yeah, that's prophecykeepers.com.
There you go.
And if you go to prophecykeepers.com, you'll see it'll be very obvious because I talk about the information and say, here, you know, you need to take a look at this. And just the red text, and the first thing you'll see when you get to go to the domain.
Well, it's interesting. I've had a few emails myself here recently concerning the very event that you're talking about. And what if you tell the people when this is supposedly due? And what exactly it is, the three planets? Or not planets?
Oh, I guess it's supposed to be large meteorites.
Yeah, that's what I meant. My apologies.
They're meteors at this point. They'll be meteorites if they make it to the surface of the planet. But, shall I tell them what I found out?
Tell them.
Well, last night, I guess sometime Thursday, some people came on the another website and were saying, hey, this is all a hoax, and we've done it to you, and, you know, we call ourselves the monitors, and we dreamed this whole thing up, and ha, ha, ha. Well, a lot of people are saying, well, if this is a hoax, then you slandered this guy in Australia, and you're going to be liable for legal problems and so forth and so on. But a lot of other people saying, well, if what he's saying isn't true, then why are all the navies in the world out to sea where they would be safer from tsunamis? Because tsunamis at sea, you know, might only be a 5 or 10 foot wave, and you know, just before they reach the shores, when they become 500 foot waves. A guy contacted me. He said that hey, I'm a Vietnam veteran. I used to work for the Intercept branch of ONI, and this isn't right because not even in wartime have all our ships been out to sea. All the carrier groups are gone out to sea.
But you're still not telling the people what the event is supposed to be and the date.
Okay.
So, let's do that now and then get back to your ship.
You bet. What he said was that on the 8th or 9th of June, he says...
This is 04, folks.
Yes, next week. That we will supposedly pass into a debris cloud of some kind. And he said that the debris cloud will occlude the sun, turn the skies dark or red, and would turn the sun dark and would cause the moon to, as it would appear, to look like blood. Well, he says, I'm not even a Christian, but everybody knows about the Book of Revelations, and
everyone knows that.
Stalking wolf's prophecy of the red skies. Giving a one-year warning to get that if the skies turn red, to get out away from authorities and live in the wilderness, and some other prophecies. Maria,
let me inject your understanding. This is going to be a number of days in a row, day and night. Not one day, not 2 days, not even nine. More like 5, 6, 7, 8 days.
Yeah. But he said about 8 or 9 days later. He said that we would be struck by the first object, which would be a large meteorite. He said all of this is coming from directly under the South Pole. Well, I found that really interesting because it has been reported that most astronomers in the world have been visiting the South Pole. And there is also kind of a mysterious military base in the South Australia that's known to the locals as Project Wormwood. And I knew all of this a month before I found out about this guy that went by the name Aussie Bloke, who finally revealed his name was Dr. Gartrell. But he said that the first object would hit about 8 or 9 days later, the end of the next week, and that 3 or 4 days later, another object. He said the first two objects, they know how big they are, what they're made of, what their speed is, and he says they'll either hit us or they'll come darn close. The third object they call an anomaly because they've never seen anything like it before. They said it's crystalline. They said it might be a giant diamond formed from the collapse of an ancient star.
Let me inject here.
That's it.
Let me inject them as diamonds. I have, in my learning, I have gone to many places in spirit. And one of those places are made up with a very tiny, the best I could put it, for the planet that had no life, that you and I would even consider partial life. And it was all diamond. But it was very, very small. So this is a possibility. But I think it was bigger than what you were referring to there. Nevertheless, that thing's floating around up there. And I'm not sure where. But I know that. I know the sky, both being a Christ follower, a Christian, a serious Christian. And you know what kind of medicine that is. I know about the red sky as well. So there are truths to this thing that my brother Blue Runner is speaking of. But is it all true? You know, clothes don't count, folks. It's got to be right on the money. And in my case, no, I'm not at all too concerned about it. Things will happen, and it might be that these things will actually take place. But I think it best is to be so. My own personal observations, my own personal things that I have seen in the past, showing the now as well as the future, I think the timing is on. Now, I've also known and noticed in a good book that it gives, you know, huge events to the world.